Good morning. So anyway, I have a story. I have a story for you this morning about a monk named Ruyan and his teacher Yanto. Ruyan is famous in Zen lore, and in Japanese, he's known as Zuigan. And Sarah heard a story, this story before. At the election session, Zuigan, or Ruyan, was famous for adopting a practice in his maturity. When he woke up in the morning, he would say his name, Ruyan, and then he would answer, oh, Oscar was there too. Yes, master. Don't be fooled by other people. This is this little practice of his has been passed down to us for hundreds of years, as well as some stories about his life, or at least one story. And this story is about when he was a student of Yanto, and he asked his teacher Yanto, what is the fundamental constant principle? And Yanto answered, moving. Ruyan said, when moving, then what? Yanto said, you don't see the fundamental constant principle. So, I don't know what Yanto was thinking when he said that the fundamental constant principle is moving. Maybe he was just thinking that of the very basic principle of impermanence, of constant change, constant something becoming other than it is right now. Constantly, over and over. Maybe that's what he was thinking of. But when I read the story, I thought, oh, I can use that story to talk more about the 30 verses. So that's what I'm going to do. And the reason I thought I could use that story to talk a little bit more about the Yogacara teaching of the 30 verses, Vasubandhu's teaching of the 30 verses, is, the inception of the 30 verses talks about the transformation of consciousness, the movement of consciousness. And the first verse says everything conceived of was as self or other is found in the transformation of consciousness. So I was thinking, it occurred to me that the transformation of consciousness, like the movement of consciousness, and in the teaching, it tells us that the transformation of consciousness goes through three movements. And I thought, it's kind of like the movements of a symphony. Because after all, as far as we can see, we just have one consciousness, one human awareness. We just have this one human awareness, this one body-mind. replicated over and over and over again in so many people. But according to this teaching of the Yogacara, this one consciousness can go through three movements, like the movements of a symphony. And the first movement is the movement of the storehouse consciousness. And it itself has an imagery, an image of movement, because the storehouse consciousness, which is the source of all, you know, our habitual life, our habits, deep, deep ingrained habits, our dispositions, our tendencies, our habit life from which we act, and seems at times so almost determinative of what we're going to think and feel. I think the analogy to a symphony is good because in the first movement of a symphony, usually the composer sets up the theme for the work, and that theme will be, you know, varied and played off of throughout the other movements, and that's pretty close to what the alaya is, this underlying subconscious continuum, as it was called in the older teachings. It sets up the theme, and it permeates the other consciousnesses that are discussed. It sends its tendrils out. I used one talk. I used the example of the mycelium of the mushroom colony that sends its tendrils out into all, you know, the forest area where it is, and, you know, from that source, that kind of diffuse source, all the other appearances come up. And so that's my understanding of the alaya consciousness, the storehouse consciousness, the source of all our dispositions and tendencies, sets up the movement for the other consciousnesses. And there's two others, or there's eight total, which is confusing, but there's two other big categories. And, of course, the second is the consciousness of a self, just simply the consciousness that we are, as Ben Connolly says, the conceit, or he quotes another teacher saying, the conceit, I am, the consciousness of a self, which is associated with thinking and always arises with self-view, self-pride, self-love, and self-delusion. Self-delusion. So, you know, this pervasive idea that we have that there is a self at the center of everything, and most of it we think it's me. I'm the self at the center of everything. So this is in the Yogacara, or at least according to Vasubandhu, this is actually, you know, he says, we believe this so strongly, I'm going to say this is a consciousness that we have. And, you know, since we hold on to that view so strongly, I think he's, you know, right to mention it and say that it is a consciousness and that receives its identity from these the storehouse, and this vast granary of our habitual tendencies and our karma that we were born with and that we have created throughout our lives. And then, of course, the final consciousness is the consciousness of the six senses. And I particularly wanted to point out that the consciousness, both the consciousness of a self and the consciousness of the six senses are arising with Alaya as their basis. And the image for the sixth sense consciousnesses is that they arise on the Alaya like waves on water. Like waves on water. So here another image of moving. And this is the sense that we have of the sixth sense consciousness, that they're moving. This is an old image in, you know, Buddha's. This isn't unique to Vasubandhu. This is an old image in Buddhist texts that our thinking, that our karmic life lies on top of some vaster life, some deeper, vaster life. So I think I'm almost sure that during our sesshin, you will have some impression of waves, and you might remember the teaching that Suzuki Roshi offers in one of the first chapters in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. I think the name of the chapter is Waves of the Mind or something like that. And, you know, he uses this image of thoughts arising in consciousness like waves. And his teaching is don't be bothered by the waves of your mind. They're just waves. He's encouraging us, I think, to see all that's arising in the mind, all of our thoughts, all of our memories, all of our plans, all of our stories. All of our internal dialogues. You might notice all of those phenomena. I think we will notice during our sesshin, and I encourage us all to regard those as waves of the mind, not identical. Those waves are not. They can be mistaken for a self, and so because they can be mistaken for a self, we're encouraged to see them only as waves, just waves. Not imparting anything more or less to them than waves of the mind. So when you see this movement that's going to be happening over the next 2.5 days, another teaching of Suzuki Roshi you might want to bring to mind is that, he says the best way for you to control your sheep or your cow is to give him or her a big field. give her a big field. Now, you might think, well, if I give my sheep or cow a big field, they'll just run all over the place. And that may be so. But they're running all over the place anyway. So if you cultivate a big field, there's some boundaries on this field. There's not an unlimited, maybe there is, but for our purposes, there is in this analogy some sense of control. I think that the chapter where he brings this up is called Control, and so this is a very interesting issue for us. How much do we intervene in the waves? Should we take a very stern attitude toward these waves and knock them down? I think at one point in my practice that I thought that was the thing, that I needed to really knock down the waves. I was responsible for smoothing the waters, and I don't think so much that way anymore. I think I have a little bit more trust that if I sit with these waves will calm down of their own accord. And I kind of more faith that I just have to sit with these waves, and I trust that they will calm down. Sometimes, when I notice it's gotten really kind of choppy, I do intervene. I do ask myself to, pay attention to my breath. I ask myself to return to this posture. I'm still a little bit proactive in my meditation, but I also very, very careful not to be, too stern or anything with myself about that. To actually be quite, to more lean in the direction of being rather tender and easy with myself, and trusting in the process of sitting meditation, which will, I know through much experience, is very likely to be moving in the direction of actual rest. Yanto says Ruyan says, when moving, then what? And Yanto says, then you don't see the fundamental constant principle. So I guess the question is, are there two fundamental constant principles? I don't know. But in my experience, I know that that the waves, if in your sincere practice, in your sincere effort, the waves of the mind will change. They will change. They'll get to be like I'm not very good at physics or things like that, but a longer wavelength, I think. So longer wavelength, that makes sense. So more distance between the peaks of the waves. You can have, if you have a lot of chop, everything's churning, that's one kind of waves. And then there are other kinds of waves that are very, I'm just having an image now. I was standing up on the cliffs last year, close to this time, looking out at the Pacific Ocean, and I wasn't noticing the waves so much. What I was noticing was the swells, and there was a big frequency, a long distance between the swells, and the swells would come, and they had a beautiful, regular, even movement. So, I don't think it's a goal in our meditation to have just a complete Pacific Ocean, just nothing happening at all. Myo talked about this, He talked about this last Monday, to have nothing happening at all. He spoke of it as a kind of cheap emptiness, something like that. There may still be some movement, but that movement may be more regular and more, the swells, they're just gentle. They don't break or anything. They just move along. I once had an experience. I think it was many, many years ago, and I think I was a child when I had this experience. I don't really remember. I think I might have been a child. And I was riding in the back of a car, and the car was on the freeway, and a truck came up alongside, and it started going right along with us on the freeway, just exactly at the same speed. And I had this impression of moving with everything, moving with that truck, moving with everything. So it wasn't, I wasn't still. I was going like in the back seat. I was hurtling along at 60 miles an hour. But I had this feeling of moving with everything. And it was kind of a beautiful, almost spiritual type of experience that just came rather unbidden. So maybe we, maybe it's not complete. My teacher likes to talk about stillness and silence quite a bit. But I think in our daily lives and in our own minds too. I mean, we often feel like we're not moving with other people. We're not moving in the same. We're not on the same wavelength. We aren't on the same wavelength. And there's often some feeling, or there can be, feeling of disharmony, of not moving with other people, and usually when we're in disagreement and we're in conflict with other people, that's usually a painful experience. It's inevitable kind of experience, but it's a kind of painful experience. And another kind of painful experience is that sometimes we're not in harmony with ourselves either. We're not in harmony with our own emotional life, with the feelings that we're having. We argue with ourselves about having those feelings. Why are you having those feelings? You shouldn't have those feelings. Those feelings aren't acceptable. Those feelings are wrong. And so, you know, we experience that kind of unregular wavelength too. I don't know. They have some experiments or something, alpha waves or something like that, that supposedly arise in the mind of a person who sits, right? Some alpha waves. I would guess those waves are like the swells in the ocean. They're like really, really regular. You know, there's kind of this regularity to them, a kind of calm movement to them. So, you know, in our sesshin, it may arise in you some wish, some desire, some deep, you know, wish to rest or to manifest a kind of regularity of the mind, a kind of evenness. I think it's okay if you feel that, if you feel that, if you want to encourage yourself that way, I think I would endorse you doing so. I would endorse you encouraging yourself in the direction of calming and ease and peace. And then I wanted to mention also Mio's talk. I thought this was very. This also goes right along with the theme here. I thought he made this analogy about how, you know, he mentioned that I never heard this before, that Shakyamuni Buddha was called the great caravan leader. I never heard that before, but he also said that he was thinking, Myo, that is, was thinking that that Shakyamuni Buddha could be called the great sailor. And the reason being so is that Shakyamuni Buddha, he thought, was a great sailor because when he was sailing against the wind, his tacks, he would tack very close to the wind. He would keep his tacks very close to the wind, not wide, not big oscillations. So this goes along with the same image of kinds of waves, right? You know, so I'd encourage us, you know, to try to tack close to the wind, not getting far afield, but actually closer to this wish that that might arise in us, this wish that might arise in us for peace, for ease, and not just even for ourselves, but for all the people here we're sitting together today, and even for people who are not here that we know that may be in some distress, we can actually turn the Dharma wheel for everybody, for these days that we're here. We really can. So one last thing I'd like to mention is that doesn't seem to take very long for people doing this kind of retreat to begin to feel some joy and some lightness and some, even a kind of happiness, right? But sometimes that manifests in a sesshin as people getting kind of giddy. They let their joy like leak out. And what I would suggest is that for the time of sesshin, let your joy well up in you, but just let it well up in you without expressing too much. Stay within the form of sesshin. Stay within the silence of sesshin. You know, try to minimize talking. It's very common for people to see someone and just realize how much they love that person, you know, and how wonderful that person is. And there's just this desire to, like, you know, converse or, you know, have some to share your joy with them. And we can do that after sesshin. But within these few days, we have a chance to just contain that and let that permeate throughout this body, just for this time of sesshin. Thank you very much.